Thank you, Winnie. Well, let me just start by saying it's a privilege being part of this gathering, and thanks again to you, Winnie and Nomusa, for the organization. These last 2 days, it's been a rapid but rich learning process on Ernest Mancoba, especially for us at Fort Hare, who had a very brief acquaintance of him. In fact, just 3 years, the period 1933 to 1936, when he was an undergraduate student there in his mid to late 1920s. Just then, for the benefit of those who are not familiar with Fort Hare or its origins, it is crucial to underline its site on the Chuma River Valley, within what was the inner precinct of the 19th century eastern frontier, or today, the heartland of the Eastern Cape Province. That map may be a little bit falling short for you where you are. Cape Town will be further this side, but you've got the Indian Ocean sort of coastline, where you've got that little red circle, which was actually the inner precinct of the Eastern frontier then during that period of the late 1800s. That's where the original Fort Hare site is. Fort Hare now is a multi-campus site. It's got sites in Islington, Alice, of course, being the original one, which I'm going to speak by and large on. So the site itself is analogous with the colonial period, as I've indicated, and the fort was indeed built in 1846, 6 years after the creation of Lovedale Mission Institution for security of that area. The same map which shows you the fort exactly. In fact, there is the relic of the fort. It's still there. Nowadays, it looks exactly like that. That was set up in 1846. The university site, as it is today, is symbolically associated with 1916. That's the foundation of Fort Hare. And from that date onwards, that garrison spot converted to a universally renowned citadel of higher learning that connected the area to many parts of the world. And crucially, as Winnie indicated, it became home for the first ever university founded for Africans within Union of South Africa. While it arose amidst segregation with only 20 students in 1916, and all those being educated within mission education kind of setting. But Fort Hare would soon spawn intellectual influence beyond the geopolitical confines of Union South Africa. And that highbrow influence had followed the growing social networks created by several historical mission schools, many of which were dotted in the Cape and some parts of the country. The same map, if you can just see. There's so many mission stations there, just in the Cape alone, which I've sort of highlighted in sort of the gold kind of. And all of those were actually legacy of that conquest period of 19th century. Of course, there are many more even across when you get to Natal, some still surviving up to today, but I'm just going to focus on this period. Ernest Mancoba then, whom we know as was also the progeny of the Anglican mission education, was already a qualified teacher by the time he came to Fort Hare in 1933. By that time, he already had shown, of course, as you all know here as artists, the notable artistry aptitude. In fact, the year he first applied to come to Fort Hare in 1929 to study matric, interestingly, and the Bachelor of Arts degree, he had already displayed that astonishing sculpturing, the Bantu Madonna, which surprised the colonial creation and sent those new grasp of African spirituality. Relatively for a young man of such ability, his years at Fort Hare then coincided with the Institute accession as a cauldron of African intellectualism. that also steadily prepared leadership proficiency. Leading up to that period of the 1930s, the most serious aspect of the college life, or Fort Hare was still called Native College at that time, so I'll be using this term, university and college, interchangeable. So the most sort of serious aspect, which students were primed for, was just serious academic work. And all these students were just drawn from these sort of mission schools, more sort of the elitist young Africans, handpicking the best of the best, and all gathered together. Just to give a snapshot prior to his arrival, from 1924, Fort Hare had awarded degrees that were conferred by the University of South Africa. In fact, these were the first degrees awarded in 1924, 8 years after Fort Hare's inception, to its first graduates. That included Z.K. Matthews and Edin Mwana. Z.K. Matthews, you can see on the right there on the slide. And 4 years later, it had its first African graduate, Gertrude Ntlabathi, a woman graduate, who was also inspirational to another generation of women graduates, especially in the early 1930s. And so by the time Mangcoba entered Fort Hare in the early 1930s, students had increased to about 170. You know, 20 in 1916, around about mid-30s, about 170. And what was so intriguing, their ideological diversity had generally developed as a lucid force. Moreover, what's intriguing for Fort Hare at this time, its reach had, as Afo said, expanded beyond the confines of what was the Union South Africa. Just to give you a shot of a group of students in the dining hall at Fort Hare around about 1933-34. I think the dating of this from Mace's book actually says 33. Stroke 34. And I presume Mangcoba would be amongst the group of those students. These students are not necessarily coming from Union South Africa, they're coming from various parts of the African continent. And I'm going to illustrate to you with the map here. These are the areas where they were coming from. So Fort Hare remained a popular African university despite the advent of Makerere, even after 1920, in addition to what were Basutoland and Bechuanaland at the time, Fort Hare then attracted students from the Swaziland Protectorate, colonial Zimbabwe and Zambia, Malawi, Mozambique, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. And these records of these students actually kept there at Fort Hare. You find them so rich because what they provided, they would have brief biographical background of where each of the students were being taught, little bit about their families, what they intended to come to study at Fort Hare, why they want to come to Fort Hare, and what is their intended sort of long-term goal. Accomplishments. So during the time of the early mid-1930s, what is intriguing also, if you read the records of Fort Hare, there were already moves by some students to expand or even radicalize the curriculum and the circumscribed set of courses offered at Fort Hare. You remember I did mention that everything was highly regulated from that kind of mission, kind of environment. And the mid-30s coincide with the sort of rise of social and political movements. And these have got an influence in how students begin to start looking at the curriculum. Those who look at the socio-political history of course of Fort Hare during this time They do underline diverse ideological opinions of several students and the ideas, strategies of the ANC that had become a little bit fasty during that period. In fact, it had stagnated a little bit, only to be revived in the next decade by the advent of the Youth League, were being supplemented by the New Unity Movement. And some of the students were linked to Unity Movement, the likes of I.B. Tabata, Jane Good, A.C. Jordan. These are the students that Ernest Mancoba rubbed shoulders with during this period of the 1930s. Of course, there were also sitting communist ideas rooted in Marxist literature on the Fort Hare campus during this very same period. And that Marxist literature, in particular, attracted the ardent Mancoba as a Bachelor of Arts student, especially since he spent much of his time chairing literary and debating societies. Furthermore, of course, he believed the literature expanded his humanitarian ideas. In fact, what's intriguing, if when you look at his particular record, when he initially applied to Fort Hare, he stated that his first preference was journalism. That's what he wanted to study. And secondly, art. Neither courses were offered by Fort Hare at that time, and therefore then he ventured to literature and philosophy, which again is very, very fascinating in how his kind of outlook and mindset got set up for his undergraduate course. In that process, of course, this is when he interacts with some of these most influential students, some of which I've already mentioned. One of, in fact, he had almost 2 years of interaction is Govan Mbeki, the father of Thabo Mbeki, who was studying at that particular time. I've already mentioned I.B. Tabata and Jane Gula, whom you told me he had a thing for her. And of course, A.C. Jordan, I did. And these are all students who had fundamental ideological influences in the political and social movements of segregated South Africa. In fact, notwithstanding being a cosmopolitan social space, Fort Hare at the time during the mid-1930s, it was still deeply drawn into this segregationist struggles of Union South Africa. And that was directly witnessed by several students, including Mancoba himself. What is fascinating, at the epicenter of those contestation, this is the period he's there, was Herzog government's native bills. There's a fascinating, or those who do sociopolitical history of South Africa will probably would have learned quite a lot of the All Africa Convention that got convened by DDT Jabavu, the son of the famous Tengo Jabavu. And DDT Jabavu was a staff member at Fort Hare who was so influential to the likes of Mancoba, the likes of Govan Mbeki. This is the stage, as I've indicated, that the low sort of low levels of the ANC. And no organization could take on the contestation of the Herzog's native bills other than the convened All-African Convention that was set on campus at Fort Hare and then ended up going to Bloemfontein to start contesting what were the land bills, the expansion of the Cape African franchise, and all these things being debated. And these really, really attracted individuals like him. And of course, this became daily rhetoric for Fort Hare students, not least, as I've indicated, because Jabavu was the university staff member, but mainly because they were drafted at the time. Students like Mancoba were being exposed to far-reaching ideas on campus. And most of these students, they loaded these native bills since they focused on consolidation of native reserves. Fort Hare actually was within a proclaimed kind of reserve as scheduled initially by the 1913 Land Act, but delayed because that act got inapplicable at the Cape because of the franchise question, and got only applied after 1936 once the franchise was expunged. So these bills were also largely in preparation, as I've indicated, of the purging of the very last remaining privilege, the Cape African franchise. Those who would understand the history of the Cape African franchise, it stemmed also from the late 19th century Cape liberalism, whereby there was an extension of franchise rights to Africans educationally schooled, owning properties, and that was being threatened by union government completely, and all its contestations were being debated, as I said, heavily at Fort Hare. So the likes of Mangcobo witnessed all of that playing right in front of their eyes. Amidst that socio-political atmosphere, as I'm concluding, unfortunately for us, Mangcobo left Fort Hare just before attaining his degree. In fact, he didn't graduate at Fort Hare. That's the most interesting part. He would later complete his BA through UNISA, or University of South Africa. Remember, UNISA was actually conferring Fort Hare's degrees, but I think Mangcobo just couldn't take the environment that was prevailing round about after 36, once the franchise was expanded. So he left and completed that degree through correspondence on his own. And of course, most of you here now would know that after that, this is when he attained the Bantu Welfare Trust bursary that took him to Paris in 1938 to fulfill his ambition to study art. Just what I need to emphasize, yet his pedigree as one of Fort Hare's astute or definitive young minds of the 1930s who shaped the identity of this institution at that time cannot be understated. In fact, when we're still currently writing the centenary history of the institution, Fort Hare completed its first centenary in 2016. We did first an illustrated history book, the one Winnie was referring to. And the biggest debate was it's always the case, who do you profile as the most sort of significant students? And we are given only scope to pick first 80 to profile. How do you select these 80 over 100 years history of Fort Hare? And some people were making inputs. Of course, everything varied from generational preferences to gender and all of that. And what's so intriguing, there was an overwhelming sort of proposition of Ernest Mangcobo being profiled as one of the sort of representation of that kind of earlier generation, of course, after the likes of Z.K. Matthews and others. So we've profiled him a bit. That's how you came across him. And we're likely to profile him more. And that's why I'm intrigued to know beyond the period Fort Hare has on him. What I'm going to mention in just 1 minute as I'm concluding, it has to be underlined, of course, again, that he arrived at Fort Hare at a critical time when this institution had attained that multinational character, and his time and the mark he had encrypted in the social history of Fort Hare during the decade of the 30s would linger for much as the records of this institution continue to survive. Just as a postscript to this, moving forward a decade and a half later after this era, sadly for Fort Hare, it would rescind taking students outside Union South Africa. And that coupled with the advent of widespread higher education on the African continent and complemented decolonization processes from the 1950s onwards, Fort Hare's character would change. Because universities in several adjacent African countries were established, and Forte then gradually became higher learning institution catering mainly for African students within the borders of South Africa, until that changed yet again in the later parts of the 20th century. But having said that, for Forte today, what is presented as a long legacy of Ernest Mancoba, of course, is the missing link with what the institution has on him on the brief period, 1933 to 1936, when he walked about in the corridors of this university. That's the little piece I have on him. Thank you very much.